How are you? A little mixed out there, aren't we? A day like today, I thought it was safe to ask what the weather like it is. Yeah, it's a great day, but it's good to have you here this morning. We come together after Easter, moving into the season of Pentecost, when we look at what it means to be the church and celebrate the birthday of the church on May 11th. On Mother's Day is when we do that this year. And we've been talking about what it means to be church. Last week, if you remember, I tried to read all the names of all the countries that we are from in the globe, and I missed my own country, where my heritage is from. But it's amazing sometimes, even if you look at churches like ourselves, which we're fairly small for the community, is that we have somebody from every continent on the globe except Antarctica. And I'm not going there to get anybody, but how diverse and wide and broad we are. And what it means for us to be church in such of this broad context with the communication issues that we've got and the opportunities to be church in such a broad and a powerful way. Also, if you were here last Sunday, you remember we almost had a hostile takeover. Does anybody remember that? In the middle of the sermon, one of our drama people came forward and we did a little takeoff on whose line is it anyway, if you know that skit on TV, on whose church is it anyway. And we had people stand up in the congregation and talk, say, you know, a young man stood up and said, church is about coming to get free cookies. We had the choir director stand up and say, church is about the music that we sing. The tech people said it's about the video feast you can see on the screen. And we talked about it and we looked about what it means to be the community of God in this place, the church. And there are three specific things that we talked about last week. The first, oh, no, back up. No. Is there one before that? Okay, leave it be. There it is. Okay. Ignore what you just saw. The church. Now I'm talking about the church, when you just saw about lemmings, right? The church, we talked last week about people who know the love of Christ. We are people. We're not just a building. And we know the love of Christ in our lives. We're people of the way. We move with love into the world and how we care for the world and how we take that spirit of Christ God has given us. And we are people who lead with love. Last week we talked about moving into the world and some of the things we do here as a church, but also leading with love. And I shared a story of Reverend Frank McCray, who was a district superintendent in Memphis, Tennessee, when Dr. King was shot, and how he struggled with that. And he said, I love my town of Memphis. I'm a Memphis boy. And all I want to do in this struggle is to do right by all the people. He wanted to do justice. And we as a church ought to be those who lead with love and lead with justice. The question for us here as our redeemers, those who sit in these chairs, who are in this place, is how do we continue to grow in ways of that grace and hope as a church? How do we take that and not sit on it? Just sit on it and make it stagnant like a pond. But how do we continue to grow in the possibilities of hope and the powerful grace God has given us? You know, I've shared this with the leadership of our church many times. I want to be able to know that our children and our youth who are here in this church now will be able to drive by this church 20 or 25 years from now and say, let me tell you what happened at our Redeemers. Let me tell you how Christ was working there and is working now. Let me tell you what they're doing. I want them to be able to do that. That we are a community of grace, and how do we continue to grow? I do not want us to be a hang-on church. Do you know what a hang-on church is? We get our bills paid. We have enough in church so it feels okay. We help where we need to pay. We hang on. There are people that will do it, and everybody, it's the same people all the time. We kind of hang on, but we want to be a vision church, an outpost of grace and love where we can do what God calls us to do in this place. And I think one of the main things we can do, and one of the main things often we ignore, is the issue of discerning, or trying to understand, discerning and learning God's mind for us in this place. How do we continue to learn and ask questions? Did you hear that? Ask questions that have to do with living God's love into this world, moving God's love into this world, and leading with ways of love and grace. How do we learn and discern? It's critical and important. In the gospel lesson today, we hear the story of Jesus feeding the 4,000, over 4,000. You know, he's teaching, and all these people are hungry. And he says, we need to eat. They have a meal. They have a feeding of all these people. A wonderful and a powerful sign. And then the next scene, he goes to the, who are they? The religious leaders. And what do the religious leaders say? If you're really from God, show us a sign. He just fed 4,000. What kind of sign did they need? What kind of sign did they want? Were they those that were just looking for somebody who would confirm what they thought and what they believed already? Or did they really want to know? It's almost like they ignored what he said. They ignored the sign. And so he tells them this. You know, you can interpret the weather. You see the clouds and you know it's going to rain. But you need to interpret the signs of our time. You need to be able to take that gift of love and grace God has given you as the church at that time and live it within your times. Not just look for a sign from heaven, but live it in the ways of love and grace. Lead in the ways of love. That's what you're called to do. Many of you I know are in the business world. And those of you in the business world, have you ever had any symposiums or workshops on leadership? How do you lead in your office? And how do you lead in the company? And you lead up, you know, the hierarchy, you lead down, you lead up, you lead across, all kinds of things. Leadership is an interesting thing. As Christ called them to lead, you know, I wonder, what is he really calling them to do? And what does that mean for us? Do we lead as Christ followers or do we lead as lemmings? Do you know what a lemming is? Some of you, it's kind of cultural knowledge for us. But, you know, I've always wondered what it would be like to lead like a lemming. Think I could try that? Hey! All right. do all of you know what a lemming is? Can somebody share that with you? The choir, they surprised me this time. Lemmings, what do we know about lemmings? What's the story told? They follow each other off the cliff. They commit mass suicide. When one goes, all the idiots go. There they are. You know? And not only is that the story told about them, we work that into business teaching, right? Don't be a lemming like all the other leaders in our community. Well, where did that come from? How do we know that? Have any of you ever seen a lemming commit mass suicide? I'll show you where you learned that. Now we'll see it. Maybe we'll see it. Is it running? Never mind. I got in trouble for running over the first service. I better go pretty soon. Okay. Nope. Well, let me tell you. For those of you who are children and young people, that's the way TV used to look. And it used to sound, and the sound in this is really awful. This is a 1958 documentary from all people, Walt Disney, this Disney Corporation. Somebody in the Disney Corporation got the idea, or they had heard that, somebody'd seen lemmings go off a cliff. So they were told, you know, they're idiots. They're mass suicide. They just jump. One goes, they all go. They must be really stupid. And so the Disney Corporation got together and said, we need to document this.
In this land of many mysteries, it's a strange fact that the largest legends seem to collect around the smallest creatures. One of these is a mousy little rodent called the lemming. Here's an actual living legend. For it's said of this tiny animal that it commits mass suicide by rushing into the sea in droves. The story is one of the persistent tales of the Arctic. And as often happens in man's nature lore, it's a story both true and false, as we shall see in a moment. Ahead lies the Arctic shore, and beyond, the sea. And still the little animals surge forward. Their frenzy takes them tumbling down the terraced cliffs. creating tiny avalanches of sliding soil and rocks, and seemingly indestructible lemmings. They reach the final precipice. This is the last chance to turn back. Yet over they go, casting themselves bodily out into space.
It's new. That's the way TV used to look, just so you know. Didn't that seem unusual? I mean, think about this. The guy who did the camera said, you know, you lemmings, you come over here, we'll shoot you doing this, then you jump off the cliff. You think they did that? Or you think they just happened to be there at the right time? You know, they had the idea. They were taught they commit mass suicide, and they needed to get it on camera. So they went to a province in Canada where there are lemmings, and they bought some. They went to another province where they had a nice cliff that you just saw. And it was about 12 lemmings. That was about it. That's all you saw, 12 lemmings. They put the angle at different places to watch them do things. Then they herded them to a cliff. And did you see that camera angle? I can imagine the cameraman shooting down going, get off there. Get off. Can't you? Because he was right there. Lemmings don't pose for that kind of thing. And we learned, we were told, and we learned because people told us, and we saw it on the TV. We saw it on the screen. And those poor lemmings, we've been talking to their idiots all these years. Those poor critters. Now, sometimes it happens. They do migrate for food, and they'll come to a cliff. And when you get crowd on a cliff, what happens? They go over, right? And so that, you know, they're not always the brightest in the world. But we learned it, and we've told it. And I wonder, who are the lemmings in this scenario? Them or us? When we are told it, when we sometimes buy into the cultural knowledge of the way things are. You know, lemmings are stupid. They'll follow the leader. They'll do whatever they're told. You know, it's been in there. And sometimes in our culture, that's the way we do things. We are told this is the way it is. We buy into that. And we accept that. Sometimes to our detriment. I'm going to share a personal story. And this is a true story. I want my sons to know. Because they always ask me when I go home, Dad, was that true? This is a true story. This is a true story. And I accepted what somebody told me. This is the way to do things. And it wasn't the best in the world. Believe it or not, I played football when I was younger. Not rugby. Football. I had pads. In the seventh grade, I went out for football. And I was a perfect football player. I couldn't run fast, and I couldn't catch the ball. So what do they make you? A lineman. And they need a lot more linemen than they need anybody else. We played. Our coach's name was Roger Mickle. Mr. Mickle. He's a wonderful man, but he had eyes with lasers, you know? When the football coach looked at you and stared you down, you knew you were in trouble. He had a voice that could scare you to death. He stood about 5'4", but nobody messed with Mr. Mickle. And he had a heart for kids, no matter whatever I say about him, he had a wonderful heart for kids. He asked me to play tackle. And for those of you that don't know football, in football there's 5 linemen in the middle. I played right tackle. There's a guard, center, guard, tackle. And we had a play called a trap play. Those of you who play football or know it, know what it's about. A trap play, the lineman over here turns, runs this way, and hits a defensive lineman coming across. Okay? We ran a play called trap left, which scared me to death every time. Billy Shaw, which is what Mr. Mickle called me, played right tackle. In practice, we'd run trap left. I'd turn, I'd run to that side, and I would try to block David Ross. I was 5'4", about 125. He was about 5'11", topping off at 200. It was a painful experience. Each time I would go over and didn't get David Ross out, I would hear from Mr. Mickle, Billy Shaw. He would scream at me in the huddle. He would scream at me. Every time we'd do it, he would scream at me. To finally got to the point, I was so scared of Mr. Mickle, I would do it. Finally, one day, Mr. Mickle came in the huddle and said, Billy Shaw, are you afraid of him over there? And I lied and said, no, I'm not, coach. we went up to the line, and he said, David Ross, this is trap left. Here comes Shaw. I mean, whack. I got to the point where I could do it, and it was painful. But one day, coach came to me in the huddle. You know, Billy Shaw, this is what I want you to do. We're going to run trap left. But I want you to hit David Ross right between the eyes. And, you know, that sounds kind of crazy, but I'm thinking to myself, he's the coach. You know, from the time to the huddle to the line, he's the coach. He knows what he's talking about. He's done this before. And if I mess up, he told me to do it. And since he told me to do it, he's not going to yell at me, right? Because I was more concerned about getting yelled at than I was what was going to happen. Well, I wasn't a very good physicist at that point. Because 125 pounds in the air versus 200 pounds with cleats on the ground, you know who's going to win that thing. I went across there. I took off. And I don't remember the collision. I do remember looking and seeing that David Ross had tackled the running back. And I do remember my posterior was sore. When I landed, it wasn't on my feet. And I do remember the helmet broken and my eye scratched. And I looked back at Mr. Mickel, knowing he was going to scream at me, and guess what he was doing? The man was laughing. He was laughing at me. He never called it again, and he let me sit out for a while, which was the big plus. But I was so pleased he didn't yell at me. I trusted what he said, and what happened? Man, I tell you, I ended up with a bruise I will never forget. I hardly remember my high school friends. I remember David Ross's name. Don't we do that, though? People come to us who we trust as authorities. Cultural patterns happen. We trust the way they are. And what do we say? Okay, you know what you're talking about. This is the way the world is. We'll trust it. And we end up on the ground. We end up hurting and bruised. The culture around us tells us, without a doubt, that what the world is really about is about materialism. It's what you have, it's what you make, it's what you can buy. We've heard about a mortgage crisis, haven't we? We've heard about bankers going and say, you can afford this much, or the size of a house that big. We have heard, you know, and we have seen in all of our high schools how kids are judged by the tennis shoes that they wear, not by the quality of their character. And sometimes we buy into that, and we end up on the ground. We are told by our culture that it's about power and control. If you can only control your life, if you can only have the power to do certain things, everything will be fine. And then we have difficulty. We have relationship issues. We have issues in terms of illness. And we realize we're not ultimately in control. It's not just about power and control. And we end up on the ground. We're told by our culture it's about security. You know, just make yourself secure. Have your little box. Have your house. Have your neighborhood. Have your church. Have your box of salvation called Jesus. Sit on that. Have that. You'll be okay. And when we box ourselves in, not only does that not work, but we are kept. We are kept from going into the world and finding Christ's love and Christ's grace in each other, our friends, but especially those who are in need. What does it mean for us to discern our times and not to be that lemming that the world asks us to be? First and foremost, I think we need to continue to learn as Christian people. Not just to come and affirm what we know, but continue to learn what it means to be followers of Jesus Christ. We need to learn about the world around us and keep our eyes and our ears open. When we, in the fall, at the beginning of Lent, every year we do the 30-hour famine. Our youth lead us as they fast for 30 hours and educate us about the hunger in the world and what does it mean for us to care for those. We ring the sanctuary with what color? Orange. The color of hope. And yet, each little circle or each little thumbprint or each little strip of paper represents a child who dies of hunger. And I don't want to know that, do you? But I better know that. I better know that. And not only should I know it because I just should, but when I know that, then I can live in ways of love and grace to feed a child and to meet Jesus in that. This week, I've tried to, do you know what a podcast is? Some of you do that. I've been listening to podcasts and some other things, trying to learn more about hunger in our world, and that we in the United States have hungry people. Can you imagine that? We are the wealthiest country that has ever been, I think. If not, we're really close.
and we have hungry people in our own country. We need to learn that and know that so we can respond to that. Secondly, we need to learn about ourselves, where sometimes we do fall short. We can help more than we do. We need to learn that and know that about ourselves. We need to learn where we can act and be the power of Christ, not because we're just obliged to, but when we act on God's call, when we discern, we meet Christ. We know love, and we grow in that love. And finally, we need to learn about the possibilities of God's people joining together in Christian love to share that love with others. In the Old Testament lesson today, we hear the story of Jonah. Remember Jonah and the... Finish that sentence for me. Jonah and the whale or big fish or whatever your tradition tells you. You know, Jesus tells the people of that time, you know, the religious leader says, we want a sign. And Jesus says, well, the only sign you'll get is the sign of Jonah. Theology has told us it's about 3 days in the belly of the whale, and Christ was 3 days in the tomb and then came out. Let me give you another sign. Another sign of Jonah. Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh. Do you know why? Because he didn't like the Ninevites. He would have been okay if God had destroyed them. That's what he wanted to happen. You know, he didn't care for the people. And yet once he responded and he went to Nineveh, you know, did you hear the big sermon that he gave? The major illustrations? The video things he did in here? He goes into Nineveh, a city that says took 3 days to walk across. He walks in it fully one day. He stands up and he says, 40 more days and Nineveh will be destroyed. And he leaves. And they all convert. That's all he had to do. I stand here for 20, 25 minutes and wonder sometimes, right? But what's the sign of Jonah? Respond to God's call. Do your little piece. And God will bless that, sometimes in amazing ways. This week, let me encourage you to keep your eyes, your ears, and your heart open to what God might be showing you, to what you can learn about the world and about yourself. Because when we do that, when we continue to discern, we become those who move God's love into the world and also lead with love. And it becomes a wonderful and a powerful thing. Let's bow for prayer. Loving God, we thank you for the many ways you love us and touch our lives. We thank you for the grace of Christ, how he has shown us his love on the cross. And Lord, we are truly grateful and thankful for that. Touch each of our hearts this day with the ways of grace, that we might open our hearts, our ears, but especially our minds to the ways you call us to serve. And in that, move the kingdom of Christ. All these things we pray in his name. Amen.